Hi folks, and thanks for listening to this Tortoise Shack podcast. A little bit of housekeeping before we kick off. This conversation, this podcast, is made possible by our patrons. We are so grateful for everybody who joins us on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. The link is in the top of the podcast you're listening to right now. It is going out immediately because the subject matter is too important to keep behind a paywall, and the anniversary is this weekend. And the anniversary I refer to is the publication of Jeffrey Shannon's report into child sexual abuse in St. John's Ambulance. I want to thank everybody who was involved. I want to thank Chris Andrews for giving us his time, Patrick Costello for answering my questions, Mick Finnegan for making a powerful contribution, and the brilliant singer-songwriter Kieran Moran for the use of his song It's Okay. It's a wonderful tune. I do have to ask you though, if you're listening to this and you like what we do and you want to help us keep going, please join us. Please click the link that says patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's a price of a fancy cup of coffee to you, but to us, it is the ability to carve out a little bit of space to be able to do this kind of work and this kind of activism. It's not a one-way street. You get a ton of additional content, including the full unedited interviews with Mick, with Chris, and with Patrick. All of those will be available on the Patreon feed as well. So if you want to hear more about what happened or how this came together, it'll all be there for you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Love to see you on Patreon. Enjoy the podcast.
March 16th, 2024 marks 1 year since the publication of Justice Jeffrey Shannon's independent report of allegations of abuse perpetrated by members of St. John's Ambulance Ireland. Justice Shannon is a child law expert and former state child protection rapporteur. He spent over a year meeting with survivors and conducting the review of procedures within the organisation, and his report was completed and submitted to the Board of St. John's Ambulance in November 2022. The terms of reference of the review covered two main issues. Firstly, to examine the allegations that had been presented to the organisation and to ascertain if there are any complaints against any other members of the organisation. The second strand, which is important to note 1 year on, was to examine the adequacy of arrangements now in place for the protection of children and vulnerable adults who may come into the membership of SJA.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and folks, this is the 1 year anniversary of the publication of Jeffrey Shannon's report into child sexual abuse at St. John's Ambulance. And we have put together a very special podcast, which, you know, when I say special, it's probably the wrong word, Martin. It's probably not the correct term, but nonetheless, what I'm trying to say to people is we're just trying to show you how serious this is by speaking to as many of the people as we can in this horrendous situation as it still continues. Before we get to it, Martin, I just want to ask you, do you recall 12 months ago the hallway downstairs and yourself and Mick Finnegan in an embrace, both of you?
I do remember it, and I was so pleased for Mick because I know the struggle, and I was so pleased for him because, you know, it's such a long time waiting for it, and, you know, what's happened in the intervening year since, just disappointment, Tony.
Yeah, it is disappointment. We've lots of people to talk to. You will be hearing from Chris Andrews from Sinn Féin. You'll be hearing from the Green Party's Patrick Costello. You'll hear from Mick himself, and you'll hear from one of the journalists who has been consistently banging this drum, and not just, unfortunately, the drum of St. John Ambulance, but the likes of Scouting Ireland and other cases that he's covered, Jack Power. So all of that coming your way. I think what we need to focus on here is accountability, and I think we'll leave it at that, and we'll get down to it now and talk about what accountability means and what it means in the terms of what's happened since then.
Hi Tony, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's kind of been a bit of
it's been an emotional roller coaster, Tony. It's been very difficult to put into words what the last 12 months have been like, and it's been absolute hell. That's the only way I can describe it. It's been incredibly hard, you know, from, you know, going from, you know, protesting outside Leeson Street headquarters to fight for the publication of the report on the child sexual abuse that was carried out by Justice Jeffrey Shannon. Getting it published, convinced now that the truth is out there, that the government will do the right thing, survivors will get the support they need, and ultimately it will bring a bit of closure to everyone's life and we could move on.
But you haven't found that, Mick.
Hasn't happened, because nothing's happened in a year, Tony. Nothing substantial, nothing tangible. You know, the hardest thing for me to really kind of deal with was the glacial pace at implementing the recommendations of the report. You know, the biggest part of that was, you know, a refresh board and the appointment of a national safeguarding officer.
And neither of them things have happened.
They haven't. No, not to satisfactory. Like they're still trying to get a safeguarding officer, and they haven't refreshed the board to a satisfactory standard for survivors, because the people that are still on that board are people that were senior officers at the time of the abuse that was carried out on multiple children within that organisation.
So, to your mind, there hasn't been, and this is the key word here, there hasn't been accountability.
There's been nothing. There's been a mealy-mouthed apology. That's about it.
The appointment of a national safeguarding lead was signalled by Justice Shannon as a recommendation of his review, and the report stipulated that the national safeguarding officer must be independent of SJI. It should be a full-time role. Recruitment for the role should focus on experience and child welfare rather than experience of SJAI as an organisation. 1 year on, this officer is still not in place. Despite the findings of the report, tireless campaigning by victims and survivors, and calls from multiple politicians, including concerns held by the Minister for Children himself. Recent developments see a move by the Department for Children to directly fund this safeguarding role via a service-level agreement with St. John's Ambulance Ireland. St. John's Ambulance claim that they don't receive government funding. Yet they indirectly receive most of their income from sporting bodies that do. We spoke to Sinn Féin TD and spokesperson for sport, Chris Andrews.
You know, it's hard not to be moved and to be upset by what has happened. And, you know, like you say, it's a year on. The Geoffrey Shannon's report into sexual abuse within St. John's John Ambulance, you know, it's bleak, it makes bleak reading. And, you know, my sense of it was at the time was that the organisation itself put its own reputation ahead of the vulnerable young people that it was working with and many of whom they abused. And the minister was saying that, you know, the state hadn't given any direct funding to St. John's Ambulance, but there was a lot of indirect funding going through to St. John's Ambulance, through sports funded by the state. So the IRFU, the FAI, the GA, a lot of the big NGBs, sporting NGBs, were funding and are funding and still funding St. John's Ambulance. And that is something that I raised and was then particularly disappointed in, and I'm still disappointed in the fact that they haven't taken it upon themselves to recognise the lack of action within St. John's Ambulance and to take action and to ensure that there is consequences for St. John's Ambulance.
Though, if you were Minister for Sport, would you be pulling purse strings to try and get people to act quicker?
Yeah, well, certainly I would be intervening with all the NGBs and looking for alternatives. I think, you know, there is alternatives out there. I'm not sure why they don't, but I would certainly be personally intervening with the various NGBs and asking them to and looking for them to, you know, insisting that they look for alternatives.
Yeah, I think that
it's not unreasonable. Like I say, you know, it's a source of income and money talks.
After a year, SJA have asked the government for funding to support a child safeguarding officer. Roderick O'Gorman seems keen to do it. Is this rewarding a bad faith actor?
As Martin has said, St John Ambulance has seemed to have sat on its hands until the last moment to then come cap in hand to the government looking for them to fill the role that they have told government up till now that they were able to do themselves. We spoke with Green Party TD, obviously member of the coalition government, and crucially for this point, a member of the Oireachtas Committee for Children, Patrick Costello, and I asked him, have St John's Ambulance acted in bad faith?
Yeah, like I think there, you know, we had a report, there were clear recommendations, there were clear, you know, there was a clear line in the sand that St. John's Ambulance need to do better. And, you know, the fact that they are coming cap in hand kind of shows for me an inertia inside St. John's Ambulance and a difficulty and maybe an inability to live up to the reality of what's happened and to live up to their obligations. And, you know, like for me, it's frustrating because how can we get accountability from them? And I think, you know, if we look at what happened with Scouting Ireland, one of the ways that Scouting Ireland was held accountable was it had all its money cut off from them. So if they need this money to hire reasonable people, there's a lever there that I think the government should be using. It's like, we will hire. You need this money to hire a safeguarding expert? Fine. We'll choose who that expert is. You know, we'll make sure that you only get this money if you are jumping through the hoops we set. Because so far, St. John's Ambulance have been in a position to not jump through any hoops, to keep things internal, to do what they want to do. And I think that's it's frustrating that they haven't changed, they haven't lived up to their responsibilities. But now that they are saying, look, we need help to do that, now is the chance that we can use that as leverage, I think, to hold them to.
I think you make an important point. You now have what maybe you're saying is leverage there, and a lever you can pull, a financial lever you can pull. But I think that lever existed already independently through indirect funding via the sports organisations, Patrick, and there seems to be a reluctance to have gone down that road at all previously.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's a decision for the individual sports organisations, how they spend their money. And certainly I would have said in the past that the individual sports organisations should look carefully at who they're hiring and where they're spending their money. You know, where you choose to spend your money is one of the most political decisions you can make, not just in this regard, in any regard. But I think that's a decision for the individual sports bodies. Now, though, as I say, if St. John's Ambulance are saying, well, we need the money, now we've got them and now you've got the leverage. Now you can say, yeah, you can have the money on the following conditions. We choose the expert. We choose the people. You show us everything. Now, look, there's wider issues there. Like at the Children's Committee, we've explored the issue of child safeguarding statements and the inspections that are done by Tussler around this kind of stuff and the need to improve that aspect of it, of Tussler's work. But certainly, I think if there's an opportunity here to get a leverage over them, we should take it.
Well, here's the thing, though. So you say we get to choose the expert. We get to set up a service level agreement or whatever the old corporate speak is for it nowadays, which is OK. You know, people will understand that. Why aren't we also trying to get accountability at the board level? There's been no change at the board level, as I see it. You know, there's only been one new addition to the board.
And I think the thing is, these are all the things. You're right on that. But these are things you can do once you have that financial power. Because if you look at, again, the perfect example here is Scouting Ireland. Perfect example is Scouting Ireland. And the minister literally turned the spigot off. The minister turned off the tap of state funding. And Scouting Ireland would have been utterly dead if it hadn't been at that point. If it hadn't, and it had to do what it was told. So if St. John's Ambulance are in that position, I think there's a lot we can ask of them in terms of accountability and transparency. and we should be asking all we can. So I'd agree with you on that one.
Do you worry that we're sending the wrong message by giving them the money when they've shown that they have money to hire PR people and they have money to fight survivors in the courts, and yet they don't have money to appoint what was one of the key recommendations in the excellent Shannon report?
I do worry about that, and like I've thought about this, and I think we do need to listen to what survivors are saying and have a conversation with survivors about it. But again, you know, I think see this as an opportunity to wrest a certain level of control back from them. And, you know, if the recommendation of the Shannon report is that they do these things, that they appoint the right safeguarding experts, and then we need to make sure that they're in a position to do that. And I think if we can gain extra control in terms of transparency and accountability through that, then let's do it, would be my instinct.
I'm not convinced yet, because I worry then that you're opening yourself to another argument that why don't we do this for other organizations now as well? What happens if they all come and then it becomes the remit of the government to cover this all the way through? And are we exposing ourselves to these things? Because ultimately, your ministerial colleague is going to carry his budget is going to carry the can for this.
But every youth work body has to have a child protection officer, has to have.
Yeah, but not everyone gets to come to the minister and say, listen, we've decades of abuse that we've screwed up over. We haven't appointed someone, even though we told you we were going to, and we've waited till 11 months and 29 days to tell you until a year afterwards, which is, you know, this is really crucial here. They waited right up until the anniversary to do it. So, you know, if I was looking at that and I dropped in from outer space, I'd say they've just acted in bad faith there.
And I guess for me, the question is, what do we want to get out of this? You know, There's elements of bad faith, not just in the 11 months and 29 days, you say, but in lots of ways they have acted.
While this March marks 1 year since the publication of the report, this publication was fought hard. Several months passed between the submission of the report and its subsequent publication, with victims and survivors once again being made to fight for the truth to be shared.
As Martin said, the publication of the report, the fighting to have the report published, and what's happened since has had serious repercussions for survivors. We spoke with Mick Finnegan again about what the last 12 months have been like for him. A little bit of listener's discretion. He speaks about subjects that some people may find upsetting, but nonetheless, it is the truth. So Mick, the last 12 months, they haven't been easy for you.
Yeah, Tony, they haven't. It's been incredibly difficult and traumatic. You know, my life kind of spoiled out of control due to the inaction and the lack of accountability. When the report was published, it was tough, really tough. I was devastated, you know. I couldn't cope with everything that I was going through, and I started to drink heavily to help me cope and get through the day. And I, you know, was desperately trying to hold it together, you know, and I was afraid to let anyone around me know what was really going on. Began to distance myself from my friends, my partner at the time, and as a result, Tony, my mental health deteriorated, and my relationship sadly ended, you know. My landlady kicked me out. And I've been homeless and sleeping rough since August.
I know that's not easy to talk about, Mick, but the fact that it's taken that toll on you personally, and that you've effectively, you know, not effectively, you're homeless. And not only you're homeless, but you're homeless and you're struggling. And again, this is kind of in a contrast to the part where you've actually tried to do as much as you can to face up to it in terms of, you know, addressing these issues and trying to make sure that you can mind yourself in under the most difficult of circumstances now.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you hit rock bottom and you lose everything, really, you know, heartbreak is a great catalyst for change sometimes, do you know what I mean? And, you know, we've been accessing the North Dublin Homeless Mental Health Team under the care of consultant psychiatrist Dr. Prosper and nurse consultant Kieran Lanigan. And, like, they've been brilliant. Like, they've been really kind of helping me kind of slowly get my life back on track through weekly therapeutic interventions. But it's hard starting from scratch again, you know, and I'm embarrassed to have found myself in the situation, Tony. You know?
Yeah.
It's tough, you know, particularly because, like, you know, it's not easy. You know, it's hard on the body. It really is. And, you know, I've been in and out of hospital since, you know, mainly due to getting, you know, chest infections and stuff like that. Yeah. But I'm hopeful, do you know what I mean? I am hopeful it won't be forever, you know. I keep linking in with my community mental health team and just focusing, you know, focusing on that, going to therapy with Nora and Nick and focusing on my sobriety. You know, like St. John Ambulance have robbed me of so much of my life, you know. I'm determined now more than ever to not let my current situation or homelessness affect my future.
Victims and survivors of abuse face many challenges and many barriers to coming forward. A majority do not come forward. Of those who do, they face the reality of exposing not only the abuse they experienced, but also the lifelong consequences of that abuse, whether that be substance misuse, poor mental and physical health, issues with authority and trusting others, or continuing concerns about not being believed or taken seriously.
Criticism of St. John Ambulance has been few and far between, and we've had very little in terms of repercussions, if any. In fact, Chris Andrews from Sinn Féin spoke to us about that very point.
You know, when you meet Mick, you hear his story, you hear his the points he makes, you know, and that abuse has in many ways continued on. Because until there is justice for people like Mick and all the other survivors of sexual abuse, there will be no resolution. And so their cases, their, you know, trauma has to be acknowledged. And I think Jeffrey Shannon's report went some way to doing that. But there has to be, I suppose, justice for the survivors. And without that justice, there can be no real peace for the likes of Mick and all the other survivors. And, you know, and when you look at, you know, I suppose child protection is everybody's concern. As a society, it's important that we're all aware of it. We all do what we can to stop it. And at one stage, the minister was saying that there was, and I suppose this is where the sport comes in, because speaking to Mick, as I do regularly, and, you know, I realise that Mick and all the other survivors don't feel there's been any consequences for St. John's Ambulance. And it is very, very hard to argue with that, because there doesn't appear to have been, there hasn't been, in fact, any consequences for St. John's Ambulance. The board itself has mostly stayed in place, and there has been no real sense of justice for or change for the survivors. And that is obviously worrying.
The government are saying that paying money to SJA will give them the power over the organisation. Is this true, or is it just damage limitation?
There's a strange groupthink that seems to believe that St. John's Ambulance needs to survive, that the organisation needs to come through this controversy. And I don't understand where that institutional thinking comes from, but it always worries me, because what happens is people protect the organization above and beyond the individuals who represent the organization. And I feel that this is clearly the case. We put this again to Green Party TD, and as I said previously, member of the Children's Committee, Patrick Costello.
Do we want St. John's Ambulance to be able to continue? Or are we saying, look, as an organisation, its time is done? And if we do want to be able to continue, then we need to get some level of control over it. We need to ensure, find ways to ensure the accountability and the transparency that they've been avoiding so far. And one of that is, as I say, the leverage that funding this position and, you know, what the terms and conditions you can put on the funding that it gives you.
Honestly, I'm not fighting with you. I think you've made that point and you've made it well. I just think there's also a fundamental flaw in, and I've said this to Chris Andrews in talking to people, the idea that we need, it has to, an organization has to be, say, St. John Ambulance. It doesn't have to be. It could be anything. It could be Can of Coke Inc. or whatever the hell you want to call it, once they're providing the actual things and doing it to a standard that is much more effective and transparent. So, you know, I don't know. You know, we see this all the time. Unfortunately, we're seeing it play out with our national broadcaster. RTE is insolvent in under lots of ways, criteria. And we have to be asking an honest question. What do we need to do?
When this small proportion of those impacted by abuse is an even smaller cohort who not just disclose, but who campaign for truth in Ireland, we can count these individuals on two hands, maybe. Colm O'Gorman, Christine Buckley, Fiona O'Brien, Joyce June and Paula Kavanagh. This cohort have brought the issue of child abuse to a national and, in some cases, international stage. It is time for an Irish government to take on the cause of such victims and survivors, and not the challenges faced by those institutions and organisations within which they have experienced their abuse.
Who would be a whistleblower? Who would be a whistleblower in Ireland? Who would be a campaigner and an activist for justice? Who would speak out? It is a very difficult situation, and we make it worse by weaponizing the organizations and some instruments of the states to make things difficult for said whistleblowers. We asked Mick Finnegan what he'd like to see, what he'd like to see himself happen in the short term, and he gave us an answer that then we had to put to both Chris Andrews and Patrick Costello. So that's what you're going to hear next.
I would like to see St. John Ambulance before the Children's Committee in the Dáil to answer questions on why this happened for so long and that there's been no accountability whatsoever for an organisation that facilitated the grooming and sexual abuse of children for over half a century. That they knowingly, you know, there was a significant organisational awareness that this was going on. And yet they chose to do nothing because they were more worried about their reputation. So I feel that it's only right that they're brought before the Children's Committee to answer questions on that, you know. I think the entire board should, with the exception of the new member that joined before Christmas, I think the entire board should step down. I think the commissioner should also step down. You know, it's worth noting that St. John Ambulance are fighting these cases. You know,
I don't want you don't want you to put yourself in any peril, because the ongoing cases are the ongoing cases. But it is notable to say, and I can say it, that there we are in a position whereby St. John Ambulance are in a position of getting money from the government and are actively fighting the survivors for compensation for the abuse that they've already held their hands up and admitted that happened, and they and part of the organisation facilitated. That just seems very, very wrong, and it sends a very bad message to survivors and people who didn't come forward as well, because we know there's always a reticence, Mick, you know this, of people to come forward.
Tony, I have had survivors slag me off, threaten me. I'm rightly so, because I did tell them that if we did engage with this report, we would get closure. And we haven't got that. You know? you know, it's hard to try and support so many people who have been badly hurt and let down by an organisation who hasn't been held accountable. There's been no criticism at all from any member of the government of this organisation. There's been no one that's come out and said, this is wrong, it shouldn't have happened, or thought about the survivors. No one said that. No one actually said, you know, the only person that did was the president. You know, Michael D said it was, you know, he threw his support behind survivors, but that's it.
I then asked Chris Andrews of Sinn Féin if he supported survivors' calls for St John's Ambulance to be brought before the Children's Committee.
People have been left high and dry in many ways.
Do you support the survivors' calls to have the have St John's Ambulance called in front of the Children's or Oireachtas Children's Committee?
Look, I know there's. I'm not a member of that committee, and I know it's. I don't know the legal advice that the committee's been given. But, you know, I just feel that St John's Ambulance haven't been made answerable. If that is possible through the Children's Committee, well, then that's the way it should be done. Whatever form it is, like, I suppose Geoffrey Shannon exposed what John's Ambulance are about. We know. So now we need to see the justice and the consequences for St John's Ambulance.
The same question was also put to Green Party TD and member of the Children's Committee, Patrick Costello. Do you think you should have St John Ambulance in to answer questions in front of the committee?
There's a deep frustration I have in general that Oireachtas committees don't have massive powers in this country. Parliamentary committees don't have massive powers. Like, look back to the time the Children's Committee, when we were trying to get people from the Mother and Baby Homes Commission in, and they simply said, no, we're not coming. You know, we don't have the power to compel witnesses. There are a whole bunch of Supreme Court rulings that really limit our power and our power to what we can investigate, what we can ask, who we can get in before us. You know, we can't compel people. We can't compel documents.
Yeah, but should you? Should you ask and make them say no?
I think if it's, are we able to ask, is it in the remit of the committee? If they're not, you know, if they get this government funding, it gives us the chance to then say, yeah, you need to come in. You need to make yourself accountable for that money and everything else. So the other reason to give them the funding is to increase that, to be able to get them into the committee. And I think it would be good to be able to have that conversation. The question is, can we? And I don't think in the current setup we can. So we need to look at ways that we can, if we can get this funding, then we can get them through the service level agreement. If we give this funding, then they fall under the remit of the committee and we can start using the committee more effectively. So I think using the committee more effectively would be a positive thing to do. And if that's a positive outcome of giving them that funding that they need, then, you know, let's, as I say, put all the terms and conditions and levers onto that funding.
So there you go. For me, the whole thing is as clear as mud still. We have one part of the House is saying we have levers we can pull just by leaning on the large organisations like the GAA and the IRFU. We have others saying we have to give them money. We have to give them money in order to manufacture a lever so we can pull to get some accountability and transparency. And we also know that survivors in the meantime are feeling more and more left behind. I'm sure it was devastating for you all to hear the reality of Mick Finnegan's last 12 months. But we will try and get through all this and try and put some sense on it now with one of the journalists who has covered this case in the most detail and cases of a similar nature, of a disturbing child sexual abuse nature, Jack Power of the Irish Times. Jack, thanks for joining us. It's been, as you say, if you've been listening to some of the clips I sent you over from the podcast before it came out, it's been a tumultuous 12 months, particularly for some of the survivors. And you continue, I think, to this day to be, even in Mick's social media feed, you're the pinned tweet as the hardest interview he's ever given. Can I ask you for your reflections on the last 12 months of where this story has gone or has failed to go? Have we seen any evolution or has, in fact, are survivors correct in saying that the change has been glacial?
Yeah, so I remember the day the report came out, and you know, it was a very, very hard hitting report, you know, kind of scathing findings in terms of the organization failing to protect kids in the past, and you know, its shortcomings effectively allowing children to be abused within the organization. And so, to be honest, you know, I thought there might have been more of a kind of a sea change or an overhaul of the organization. They've said they've made kind of progress on several reforms, but on the key kind of metrics or the key, you know, places you look in terms of, to say, has an organization changed? You know, its board hasn't really been refreshed that much. You know, three of its kind of longest serving members said they would step down. Only two of them have stepped down, and one of them actually has stayed on as interim chair. And I think then one person has subsequently joined the board. So there hasn't really been this change in governance at the top of the organization, which you might expect after a, you know, kind of a damning report like this, in terms of the organization looking to refresh itself. You know, on the kind of volunteer side, John Hughes, the commissioner of St. John Ambulance, who's, you know, been in place for a good number of years now, is still in place. There's no suggestion that he's stepping down or moving on or anything like that. And I think one of the other main points that survivors in particular are kind of concerned about, you know, one of Judge Jeffrey Shannon's big recommendations was that the organization appoint a full-time professional safeguarding officer who, you know, would work, you know, on child protection matters, be the oversight person, the go-to person in the organization on child protection matters. And we're a year on and that post hasn't been filled. There's been kind of several stop-start efforts to fill it. You know, the organization has kind of always said, oh, we're nearly there. We're a few weeks away from filling that post. But then, you know, we found out in recent weeks, you know, we were reporting that they had to then go to the government and say, actually, we don't have the funding to, you know, to hire this person. You know, the organization, I recall looking through their accounts, you know, they don't have a lot of cash. And so as a result, you know, for a year on, they haven't made one of the most important changes, which is a full-time professional safeguarding officer, which would really professionalize child protection within the organization and make sure that it's not, you know, child protection by committee or child protection by board, that there's an experienced specialist person who has a really strong grasp of this field to be able to, you know, tell the organization, actually, you know, that's not right, or this is how we have to handle this. So, you know, the fact that they haven't gotten their act together and been able to, you know, fill that role is probably the most concerning. And it's the most concerning to, you know, to survivors, the most concerning to politicians. You know, Minister for Children, Roger O'Gorman, previously said in the Oireachtas Committee on Children that, you know, he wouldn't be able to have confidence in the organization's child protection standards until they had that professional person in place.
Jim, it's a really crucial point, and I'm glad you've given the context to it, because I've spoken to on this podcast Chris Andrews and Patrick Costello, one opposition, one in government, and both kind of feel that the idea that St. John Ambulance misled to a degree by the idea that we're going to appoint this individual for up till 11 months and 29 days, effectively, until the one-year anniversary was almost on their doorstep, and then approached the government. The phrase I'm going to use is cap in hand, and it has left survivors feeling, you know, more re-traumatized and concerned. What I know, you broke that story. What was the reaction? Do you feel, because there's two schools of thought here. It's one, oh, this is a good thing, we now have leverage over St. John Ambulance. Or then there's the second one, well, actually, this is an insult to everybody because they've now wasted another 12 months.
Yeah, and I think the fact that they weren't, they weren't really open at the start to say, well, there will be funding challenges in terms of finding the resources to appoint this person. You know, that was never part of the conversation until very late in the day. And I mean, they would have known themselves, you know, whether you have the funding or not to appoint, you know, somebody to a role, a professional staff. I mean, they only have in terms of staff, they have a tiny number of staff, you know, who work full time in the organization. It majority volunteer led. But, you know, they have assets as well. You know, you would imagine that it would have been priority number one to kind of move heaven and earth in terms of cobbling together the resources and the finances to, you know, appoint this person as soon as possible last year on foot of Shannon's kind of scathing report, which not only found, you know, issues around how abuse had been, I suppose, handled in the past, but also shortcomings in current child protection practices and standards, issues around Garda vetting, issues around culture that still remained. So, you know, effectively, Geoffrey Shannon said, you know, the organization, you know, was not a safe place for children. And I think until, you know, they appoint this professional safeguarding officer, I think it would be hard for people on foot of all that we found to view the organization as a safe place for children. And as you said, in terms of the, I suppose the fallout of the decision that the department are going to fund this role or part fund this role, I mean, on one hand, it certainly will provide more oversight. And that's what I initially thought when I heard this, that, you know, the department, the funding will be subject to an annual, you know, kind of grant that St. John Ambulance will be, you know, funded by the department, by the state, which brings with it an added level of oversight. And, you know, the department are kind of carrying a bigger stick now, that, you know, in future dealings with the organization, they'll have a lot more sway, I think, than they had previously. I mean, previously, you know, the department had been on foot of our investigation and our reporting, you know, way back in 2020, the department had been kind of pushing the organization to commission an independent review, which in the end was led by, you know, Geoffrey Shannon, but they ultimately could only try and persuade the organization to do that. They didn't have any.
Yeah, they've no force of powers of compellability, but.
Or purse strings that, you know, you can say, right, well we're turning off.
We'd argue that, because again, you could argue that they have indirect ability by being able to lean on, you know, the NGBs, the larger sports organizations that do receive direct funding, and say, will you not look at alternatives for who you're using to, you know, be pitch side on match days and the likes of that. And you could use that as a third party way. But yes, I accept what you're saying. I just think, you know, there are levers, there's always ways, and you know, money talks, as has been said already and several times. But just for the listeners' benefit, though, another subject that came up is Scouting Ireland, which was another story that you broke and you covered in great detail. Are there any, were there similar implications in terms of the financial stresses being applied then that actually did bring about the reforms? Is that where you see the echoes of similarities here?
Yeah, you know, well, certainly, you know, back in 2018, when, you know, kind of we first broke the Scouting Ireland story in terms of the initially a flawed handling of a serious sexual assault between young volunteers, that then I suppose rolled into revelations of, you know, kind of huge historical child sex abuse that emerged, you know, in the Catholic Boy Scouts of Ireland and the Scout Association of Ireland. But one thing I found, and actually I do think that there's a parallel here, is that at the time, Minister for Children, Catherine Zappone, was, you know, incredibly concerned about governance shortcomings at the top of Scouting Ireland, how they were responding to the whole thing. And what she was able to do, you know, I think at that point, the department funded Scouting Ireland to the tune of about £1 million a year, which made up probably about a quarter of their overall funding. So a huge amount, you know, of the organization's income. And she suspended that funding on two occasions, effectively turning off the tap, and said, you know, I'm not going to restore funding until there's, you know, kind of serious overhauls of how the organization works, how, until the entire board is replaced, until they have, you know, much stricter standards around child protection. And similarly in Skating Ireland, they kind of went through the same journey where one of the first proposals, on the fallout of all that, kind of mishandling of allegations and stuff like that, was the recommendation also that Scouting Ireland appoint a full-time professional child safeguarding officer. You know, and that wasn't cheap either, but the Scouting Ireland also kind of went to the department at one stage to increase their funding to allow them to hire a kind of a safeguarding team. So it wasn't just one person, it was, you know, kind of four staff. But I definitely think that the state and the department having that lever of being one of the main funders of the organization allowed them to, you know, exert much greater pressure. And you know, effectively, the organization, Scouting Ireland, came close to financial collapse as a result of the department suspending funding. And so, you know, that was a great, I think, mover in being able to really push through reforms and, you know, really deep and wide scale reforms of the organization, that, you know, the funding's not coming back until we're satisfied that you've done X and Y.
The final question I have for you, and please feel free to tell me, you know, you can't answer that, or you, it's just not something that's within your remit. But we said about the lack of funding, yet you're aware of the survivors and that St. John Ambulance have the money to fight them in court continually. They are still fighting them, and they have paid for a PR company to work on their behalf as well. Surely that sends a bad message to the department. If they're going to be handing over €100,000 of effectively taxpayer money to an organisation that we know has admitted its culpability here while it continues to fight survivors through the courts.
Yeah, and I imagine in terms of they have been fighting those cases, you know, for several years. You know, survivors have spoken about how it seems the approach and the legal approach has been to play hardball. So, you know, you would imagine that, you know, at the end of the day, they'll probably rack up significant legal bills. And also, if the organization has to start paying out settlements, you'd imagine those settlements would also be, you know, substantial sums. You know, I've often seen, you know, six figure sums for settlements of historical child sex abuse. So, you know, the organization will really have to face up to, I suppose, how it's going to survive going forward financially. And I assume there's, you know, kind of significant concerns internally in terms of where does this go? And if further people who came forward to Jeffrey Shannon to disclose being abused, who haven't yet taken legal cases, if they also decide to take legal action to seek compensation for what happened to them, you know, you'll imagine the bill at the end of the day will be significant. And similar with Scouting Ireland, you know, it also creates this kind of existential crisis that the fear is the bill and the settlement will be bigger than the organization will be able to pay. But you know, that's its responsibility.
Yeah, I think that's it. I've said this to Patrick Costello earlier. I said the fact that the organization itself may not be. He said, you know, do we want to keep it on? Do we need to reform it? And you're thinking, well, is it reformable? Number one, and two, is it viable? Because there's a huge question there hanging in the air because these cases remain outstanding. Look, Jack, I want to thank you personally for the work that you've done over a number of years, over a number of these stories. I'd like to thank Sinn Féin TD Chris Andrews, Green Party TD Patrick Costello, and my co-host Martin McMahon for putting up with the narration and doing a great job on it. And you, the listeners, for sharing, and particularly our members, our Patreon supporters who keep the mics on and allow us to be able to do projects like this. If you're not a member, please join us on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. The full interview with Mick Finnegan and the other contributors to this, the unedited versions are available there now if you want to listen in more detail. And we will let Mick have the final word on this. Thanks for the support. Talk to you soon.
It shouldn't have to be this hard. It shouldn't have to be down to survivors to hold organisations accountable. The highlight areas that have safeguarding concerns with an organisation that chose to do nothing for 12 months. This is the thing. They sat on their hands. Chose to do nothing, and on the last minute, because they knew the anniversary was coming up, then they approached the minister for help and support, looking for a few bob. But they had the money to pay for PR. You know? They had the money to pay for a PR guy. You know, the money to pay for the legal teams. It's just the way we've been treated through this entire process is abhorrent. It's unacceptable. And it re-traumatizes every single person that was a victim of child sexual abuse.
Was it I was broken? Was it I was hopeless? Was I just a voiceless boy and went unnoticed? Was I missed inside, hoping you'd realize? I'm in the middle of a war between my heart and mind. It's not okay to do it all alone. It won't matter where you're going, won't you have a hand to hold? If your days are darker than you'd hope, find yourself a light so you won't see these ghosts. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay to feel alone. Now that I've changed my ways, I think of better days. Cause a rope was only gonna take my pain away. I'm too strong a boy to make a stupid choice. I could've gave it all away just because I was afraid. It's not okay to do it all alone. It won't matter where you're going, won't you have a hand to hold? If your days are darker than you'd hope, find yourself a light so you won't see these ghosts. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay to feel alone. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, okay, it's 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 okay to feel alone.